Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today. It is a little bit warmer here in the south today, although I'm not going to say that very loudly because everybody is freezing and has snow. But if anybody would like to trade, I'm up for a trade, you know. I haven't seen snow in probably decades. So today, we are going to have an exciting show with Dr. Catherine Kelly. This is going to be a very interesting topic because a lot of people, I would say probably in the last several years, are starting to talk about what we are going to be speaking about today is their soul. Their soul. You know, hey, I am a Roman Catholic, and that's how I was trained. I went to the Catholic schools in the 50s and 60s. Our soul, there was no such thing. It was called the nuns and a ruler and a catechism, and you had to memorize things. And then when I went on further and started to play the organ in Catholic Church, the masses were still in Latin. The priest still turned around the other way. It was all about mysticism and things you didn't need to know. Well, you just didn't need to know them. So now we're talking about our soul, our intuition, our heart, and what are we really here for, and about our health. All of these things, which are really thought were for people that had more education, they had a bigger stature in life, they were someone to be held up to in the community. And now we need to start learning about them. So this is really a confusing topic to a lot of people. But today, Dr. Kelly has assured me she has a nice, easy way to explain everything that she's talking about the soul health model. And it is a very simplified, basic way to think about your soul and your health. So Dr. Kelly, she is a licensed practicing psychologist, consultant, and speaker, and today we will be speaking about her book, which is called Soul Health, Aligning with Spirit for Radiant Living. And no panic here, because she has promised she will define each of those words, and then we'll take it from there. So welcome to the show, Dr. Kelly.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here tonight.
So don't you think that that's true over the decades? It's never really been in discussion, a word of a soul. I'm not sure about your background, but like I said, mine's Roman Catholic, and that was not on the dictionary, you know?
Right, and in fact, I was actually brought up Catholic too, and I don't remember one time a church official actually talking about the soul either, so I very much agree with that. And yet I think what has happened, like you said, is that we've gone through a bit of an evolution in terms of how we think about both religion and spirituality. And I think that's kind of what's expanding our view on soul, is that, you know, even though certain religions may not talk about it, I think everybody can relate to the word soul once they realize that it's really, and in my definition, I try to simplify it because, like we were talking before the show, a lot of people have different connotations or understandings or maybe conceptualizations of what the soul is. But to me, it's a very simple thing, is that we all have a deep part of us that has a sense of knowing of when something feels right or feels wrong for us. And so, in general, the way that I explain the soul maybe in one sentence is, it's the essence of who we are, and it's that voice of who we are. So it's just that deep part of us, and again, most people have this sense of knowingness about them if they start to tune in with it and help, really helps them guide their lives, basically.
You know, I think that while the words may be resonating with some people, it might be difficult with others, because you know when you say, when you go to sense or feel or do something and how it would resonate with you, well, goodness, there's so many people even in the last five years or so, maybe a little bit more, with all this economic changes and everything. And if they see food and they know that it's going to feel good to them, they're going to take it. Or if they see, an opportunity where they might have a sense that it might not be that good, they're just going to shut that piece off in their mind and say, I know that that will keep a roof over my head and I'm going to do what I have to do. So I think there's a lot of bargaining we do, too, with our soul and our body and our mind and our spirit. So I think we'll get into that a little bit more, too.
Sure.
Because
sure.
Right now I think, too, when you say soul, that may be working for some people, but for some other people who are in survival mechanism or survival mode right now, how do they even begin to think about that? You know, how do you even say, what is this, or how do I even figure this out?
Well, you know, a lot of what to talk to folks about, whether it's a you know, psychotherapy client or a workshop participant or someone who I might be just kind of having a casual conversation with, I really talked a lot about just using a gut reaction because, again, like you said, our head can get in the way sometimes of overriding that sense of knowing or that sense of what we think might be right for us by kind of talking ourselves in kind of into or out of certain things. But it's really that gut reaction. And it's not quite the same as an instinct. It's just a gut reaction of what you know you need or don't need to do or what you know you do or don't need in your life. And so I think all of us have had situations in our lives where we've followed a gut reaction and things have worked out or gone well. But there's other times when we follow a gut reaction, or when we ignore a gut reaction, and then we realize, geez, you know, my gut was telling me I should have done that or shouldn't have done that. And so it actually can be a very simple way to identify the soul is just to listen from that gut reaction, which I think most people do understand gut reactions. You know, they may not understand the word the soul, or they might think it's too woo-woo or esoteric, but in my mind, our gut reaction really is that voice of our soul that will help guide us at any time. And we can kind of, I guess in some ways, we can use whatever term we want to for that gut reaction. Mm-hmm. But in my way of thinking, you know, our gut is like our GPS system. You know, it does not usually lead us wrong. And so it gets us closer and closer to our, you know, inner wisdom, our inner truth. And so, you know, again, I think most people understand that gut reaction process.
You know, it's so interesting because I've had that all my life where I would say something and people would look at me and they'd go, I don't even know what you're talking about. 2-3 weeks later, it would occur. Or I would speak with people, you know, and say, oh, I just thought about to give you a call. And then within 2 to 3 weeks, something drastically would happen to them. Or I would be thinking about a person in the next day. They would pass away. And it was like, oh, okay, we're getting this. And then I was laughing when you were saying that is because a gut reaction. I can remember just the other day before Thanksgiving saying, oh, I wonder if my son's getting a turkey from work. And it didn't even faze me to think anything other than that. Then the next day, my son came home and he said, darn, I left the turkey at work. And I was thinking,
oh,
if I had just called him at work and told him to make sure and or even asked him the question, he might not have left it there, you know.
Right.
And
right.
It could be something so simple as that, yet it could be something, as I've said, with, you know, you get an inkling to be able to, you know, call somebody or speak
right.
to somebody or say something you may not have said, and that is a little bit stronger and that's a little bit, you know, something you really need to pay attention to, but they're all still on that same realm of that is an idea of what you and I are speaking, correct?
Yeah, and I think what I would say is that, you know, our gut reactions, our soul, let me back up, our soul needs the voice of our head just as much and the voice of our heart just as much in order to guide us. And so those intuition points that you're talking about, you know, your son with the turkey or, you know, calling a friend or whomever, those bits of intuition are very much related to kind of our knowingness or our soul, because we, as humans, we need our brains in order to get through life. And so our brain and our heart informs our soul, but it's really our soul that has that first reaction of, gosh, there's something going on here that I need to check into. In this case, it was your son and the turkey or, you know, whatever
right.
it was. So, yes, the intuition is very much related.
And
it's
I think really
the
interesting.
More you know your soul, I'm sorry,
yeah.
I think the more you know your soul, the more intuitive you become.
And I think people sometimes get hung up on the words. You know, as we
yeah.
were saying before the show, you know, with the inspiration in my spirit and my heart and my soul and, you know, that little tear effect on, you know, but then I have an emotion too. So is this an emotion and maybe I can't trust it or maybe it's not my soul talking? And, you know, that tear of all of these ideas of, I think of soul and then spirit and then heart, inspire, you know, and then we get down to, you know, where does your gut reaction go in there? Maybe it goes on the top, and then we look at the bottom, and they say, oh, well, that's my emotions. And you kind of, they kind of don't know where they fit. But can we take all of those words and just say, they're all a petal on a flower, and your flower is that? Maybe?
Sure, absolutely. And I think because human beings are very complex, we need all of those things in order to help us kind of evolve and grow and learn about the world. And yet what I also say is that our head can lead us wrong, our heart can lead us wrong, but our gut generally does not lead us wrong. Because, again, our heads are filled with expectations and they're filled with kind of societal norms and cultural norms of things we, quote, should do or should think. But sometimes at a deep level it doesn't fit for people. Then they may have internal conflict going on until they really get to know themselves and they challenge some of those norms or expectations to see if it really fits for them. So I think sometimes our heads can lead us wrong. Well, oftentimes I think our heads can lead us wrong. Our hearts can lead us wrong, but that gut reaction is sort of that deep, kind of almost a visceral feeling of what direction to go in or what decision to make or what feels right or wrong. So they're all related very much. And like you said, they're kind of a tier system or kind of a multidimensional flower or I think you mentioned the word pyramid earlier, and very much all interrelated. And that's why even with the book, it's based on a model that I created called the Soul Health Model that has 10, to me, 10 branches of the human condition that are all very, very much related and have a key interplay between them that helps us reach that radiant health. So we're not easy beings. Beings are not easily explainable.
But I think also, too, to be really clear, so that most people will understand, we're not saying anything is right or wrong. We're just saying that it exists. Because I know so many times I would speak with people and they would say, oh, but you told me not to just do my emotions. You told me not to do that. You told me not to do this. Probably the only thing I would say to everybody is, you know, when you're saying, well, I really would love to do this, but, oh, I know he kicked the can down the street. It's okay. Oh. Or, well, I really didn't like what he said. Well, that's who he is. So I think if you could just start learning to be able to even listen to yourself is maybe just cut that sentence in half. Take the beginning part of it and stop. Mm-hmm. No more buts, no more can'ts, no more okays, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's just he did it, she did it, they did it, whatever. And then just decide from there, good, bad, or ugly, you know?
And just learn from it, absolutely.
Right. Because I think a lot of times when people use it's okay or it's only them, granted everybody's an individual, but then granted you also turn around and saying you're accepting everything that's going on. Well, if you were accepting it, you wouldn't have said it in the first place.
Right, right. My favorite one is when people say, I love them to death, but...
And
that's one of those that it's like, okay, why shift that? But yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And I think so, too, though, with a lot of people, the idea of, as my daughter would always call me, she used to always call me a gypsy because we moved around and did different things, and we would, you know, a lot of life went on. And now I notice she has on her Facebook page, she calls herself a professional vagabond. And I'm thinking, how dare you? You call me a gypsy, and now you're going to be a vagabond.
Right.
You know, but then when you think of people, and you think about people when they're saying, you know, I love them, but, or I care about them, but. And I think the idea there is that can you accept people with all their flaws, and then can you really, you know, still take that little piece out and still be okay with it? And I think people are growing so rapidly these days in what they really want in life. It's going to have to start being okay to let other people go.
Mm-hmm.
And,
absolutely.
You know, do we really want to be people that want to let people go all the time? And I'm not so sure that that's resonating really well.
Well, and you know what's interesting, and boy, gosh, I've had a full load of clients lately, and the holidays are tough for a lot of people, but, you know, one of the themes that has come up is people are really starting to, like you said, come to that realization that in order for them to be healthy or happier, sometimes they do need to kind of weed out some of the folks and, you know, that have been in their lives. And one of the, you know, one of the things I tell people left and right is the older we get, the more discerning we have to be for who we spend our time with, because if we're not feeding, and again, I'm going to use the word soul, feeding our soul through the people we're around, then we are going to kind of drown in some of the unhappiness and not move on in directions that we're really supposed to evolve to. So, and my chapter about social health talks a lot about that whole idea of having to move on and let go.
But I think also the idea of letting spouses go is getting to be, I've noticed it a lot more with a lot of people recently, but they're holding on to them because now with the state of the, you know, of healthcare, of having somebody else there, hospice care, dementia, Alzheimer's, all of those questions all lurking, like, you know, I always call them, they're like lights on the Christmas tree, you know? They're all those things you just don't want to see. You'll talk about them once a year, but you don't want them around all the time. You know, but it's really hard for people to say, you know, hey, I'm going to put up with it. You know, I've done it this long and I'm just going to suck it up.
Right.
And then what does that do for your spirit and your soul?
Exactly. Exactly. And I, you know, I do talk about that a lot with clients, but also in the book about, you know, what is dampening your soul? And what is enlightening your soul or you know, really enhancing your soul? And again, there's an energy about people who are not healthy for us. And so when we spend time with people who are healthy for us, we feel uplifted. When we spend time with people who aren't healthy for us, we feel down the dump. So, you know, it is what is feeding that soul part of you. And again, kind of making those decisions toward, how long do I want to deal with this? How long do I want to put up with this? Can I put up with this? And so, you know, there's a chapter in the book that I talk about stewardship and how we have to become a steward to our soul. And in many ways that does, you know, mean looking at each and every one of those branches of the model, including the social branch, and saying, okay, what do I need to weed out here or prune here or, you know, release here so that I can thrive? So, yeah, it's a process, definitely.
And I think I've, you know, I've even noticed a lot more women who are in their 70s or early 80s, and they're just not willing. They said, I don't want to hear it, you know, it's okay, whatever. You know, I don't know how many years I have left, and quite frankly, I'm going to be comfortable right where I am. So I think that there are certain situations or ages or circumstances that some people may say that this is not for them. So I don't think you can say it's for every 100% across the board, but it's for those people who are, you know, maybe looking for that or searching that out.
Well, and you know, I think health in itself is such an individual process. And, you know, and so all of the aspects of health, including, you know, social health, emotional health, you know, all of the different branches are very individual. And like you said, it's really not apples to apples. It really is an individual, unique soul process of figuring out what's right for them at any given time. And what might be right today might be totally different, you know, 10 months from now. So it is, it's a process, and that's why kind of keeping in tune with yourself at any given time is so important.
Right. And I have seen people, they've recently I went to a pediatric oncology seminar, and the doctors were asking me questions, and they said, what are you doing here? I said, because, you know, when you have the patient with the diagnosis and you tell them that you can't help them anymore, guess where they come?
Mm-hmm.
They're coming to me because they still want to feel that they still have some hope. They want to know what hope is. They want to feel that they have time, and they still want to feel that they will be okay. And I've seen a lot of people taking about face. You know, they were like maybe ready for a divorce, ready for this, ready to give up a job or whatever, and they get a health crisis, and they're like, that means absolutely nothing anymore. I'm staying right where I am. I don't give two hoots what's going on, you know?
Right. Well, and, you know, each aspect of our life kind of takes precedence at a different time depending on what is happening. And, you know, you're right, when a physical health condition happens, oftentimes, and this is what's been so amazing, I used to work during my graduate program, I used to work for it was called Heartland Care Center at the time. It was an HIV/AIDS counseling and testing site.
Mm-hmm.
And learned a ton ton about medical field, but also learned a ton about where clients come from in terms of experiencing, you know, physical health. And many of the clients that I worked with said that it was the best thing that happened to them because it forced them to look at other aspects of their lives that they had been ignoring. So it can kind of go both ways, where in some ways, you know, we shut down taking care of ourselves in other ways regarding health and when we have to function or focus on our physical health. But with many clients, it's the opposite, that their health concern actually triggers them to start enhancing other parts of their life that they've been ignoring. So it can go both ways, which is why I think it's so wonderful right. to really look at a whole person health approach so that, you know, not only do practitioners need to look at whole person health, but really, you know, clients and patients really need to and are starting to look at whole person health.
And I think sometimes when I speak with people, I say about their soul or about their heart, I always put them together, soul, heart, and spirit. I put them together and for my clients because when I say to them, you know, what is it you really, what do you really need today, you know, mm-hmm. and they'll tell you what that core is. They'll always say that. But some people will say, and some people will just go into a story that could take 4 hours long. And, you know, I'll just sit there and I'll listen. But then, really, if you go back to it, it's the first three or four words that came out of their mouth. It just took the rest of the time to justify and let you know the story.
Right.
So
exactly.
kind of we do know. We really do mm-hmm. know. We just don't know if it – we're trying to get it so that other people can – or you or they – can all see that, is this a picture? I think so really when people are coming to us, they're saying, this is what I really want, but this is what I have. Is that what the picture is supposed to look like? You know, a lot right. of people say, well, I really do love somebody, but then they're not really that happy in it. But they're saying, but isn't that what it's supposed to be? So,
well, and you're bringing up a really good concept because one of the things that I think is very true is that, you know, many people do know what they need or don't need, but they don't trust themselves. And partially it is because of what society says or families say or cultures say or whatever. But oftentimes we have the knowingness, we just don't trust it. And so like you said, if people were to stop after the first or second sentence when they walk into someone's, you know, a clinician's office and just trust that, okay, I am really talking about this the right thing, rather than having to justify or explain, you know, they probably, you know, would be better off. But we have a tendency to train our brains, especially in our country, rather than train ourselves to listen to our gut reactions or our souls. And in many cases, I think, and probably a lot of listeners would agree with this, that oftentimes we're taught to kind of dismiss what our soul is saying and go with our head, even though, again, our head may not lead us down a path that's really healthy for us.
So in the title of your book, you say soul health, aligning with spirit for radiant living. So can you define what you believe a few of those words are, like radiant living, but then aligning with spirit and soul health, and then we'll talk about the book?
Okay, yeah, let me just go ahead and break it down because I think this is a good way to
right.
kind of explain. Soul health itself, to me, if I were to kind of loosely define it for folks, is basically knowing yourself at that deepest level and then basically looking at all of the aspects of your life to make sure that you're working toward creating health within each one of those branches. And in the model itself, and I'm sure we'll talk about that in a second, the model mm-hmm. itself really is kind of self-explanatory because when most people think about health, they automatically go to the physical health aspect, which, of course, is one of the branches. But in my work as a psychotherapist and a teacher within medical schools and lots of the different experiences I've had, that is really one of 10. You know, to me, there are 9 other key branches that are very important in I call it the human condition, working through the human condition in order to balance them to feel, you know, the greatest sense of well-being. And so aligning with spirit has to do with basically knowing, listening to that gut reaction, listening to that inner knowing, and aligning with it. And the alignment is all about listening and trusting and following through. And then the radiant living part is really sort of the bonus of basically once you know at that deep level what you need in order to feel healthy and you align with it, by trusting yourself and following through, then basically we feel happier and happier, we feel healthier and healthier, we feel more vibrant, we feel more radiant. And so in essence, what we're doing is we're becoming that ultimate steward to ourselves and leading our lives in a way that matches or aligns with who we are at that deepest level. And I think all of us yearn to just be who we are, but we're, as a culture, we struggle to just be our unique selves because, again, there's so many norms involved. So I don't know if that helps explain it, but it's sort of a layered definition there.
You know, I think so many times when we say about fitting in or following the crowd or looking like we should look or feeling like we should feel, I mean, that goes right along with all the bullying and all that other stuff right now. I mean, you know, people just don't fit in. They're trying to speak out from their inner being, but they really can't. And, you know, I can remember, I remember being in naturopathic medical school, and they, I think it was one of the upper administrative teachers that said to me, "You just don't look the part. Maybe you shouldn't be here." And I went, "What? Okay."
Oh, lovely stereotype.
Right. And,
well, and you know,
and, you know, I can honestly say at that time, you know, it kind of really set me back, and I'm thinking, okay, well, what do I need to change? Are you not going to be accepted? Is this not right? Blah, 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 blah. And it does, you know, take you down. So I know that people get that all the time, and trying to be able to listen to your gut or listening to yourself and saying that maybe what I want to do or not want to do, that's a really huge leap. I think all of your other parts on your the Radiant Health Tree, which we'll get on in a second, is that they will flow, but that initial step is sort of like, hey, I'm taking my stilettos, I'm going into the abyss, you know?
Right.
What the heck? I don't want to do this, you know? I mean, I don't even get it, you know, anymore. So that is really a hard place for a lot of people.
It is a hard place. And yet, you know, again, I think it's one of those norms that's starting to kind of break down a little bit, which is good. You know, I think about, you know, so much that has been in the news this year, and I'm really kind of excited about a lot of the things that are happening because, you know, even the Pope is changing. You know, the current Pope is changing the concepts so much. They're, you know, much more inclusive, and I love it. And, you know, President Obama, of course, he's had many, many challenges, but, you know, he's had to break through lots of norms. Dick Cheney, with everything with his daughters, you know, it's just been wonderful to see that, you know, some of those things that people were terrified about, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, certainly 20, 30 years ago, are coming to the surface to become part of the norm now. And I think it's fantastic because it's going to give people permission to much more easily put on those stilettos, metaphorically, and basically get themselves out there as who they are. And, you know, we were talking earlier about, you know, going to Vegas or something just to be who you are, or going to New Orleans, mm-hmm. or going to places that you can just be who you are. And that's really what people are yearning for, is just to be who they are and not have to stay in those barriers anymore. So, you know, I have this client who was in my office today, and she's 23 years old, I believe. And the first time she walks in, she has, from about midway down her hair, she has like this turquoise blue hair, and the rest of her hair is kind of blonde. And the funny thing is, I was noticing today, it's about the fourth time I've seen her, I was noticing today actually how beautiful her skin looks up against that blue.
Isn't that something?
Gosh. Yeah, and I was just thinking, gosh, you know, I wonder if she realizes how beautiful her skin looks up against that pretty turquoise blue. And, you know, so, you know, people are starting to just kind of balk, you know, some of those norms, or book some of those norms, which I think is really good, which in essence, and I know this can sound a little radical, but in essence, that's what Radiant Living is all about, is starting to inch your way closer and closer to living who you are at that deepest level. You know, because what could be better than to just be who we are?
And, you know, I have so many end-of-life clients, and what they've always said is when they get right to the end, and there's even been clients where they would not give it up until the end. Absolutely would not give it up. And those are tending to be the ones who would say, you have to save me at all costs. I don't care what the doctor has to do. You save me at all costs. If I have to lay there in a coma for 100 years, you save me. That's what I want. Because they just can't say, they know in their heart they have to say something or do something or be something, but they just can't let that last feather go, you know, and it's just so difficult. And it's going to come to a time where this is going to have to, you know, start happening a little bit more and more. So, you know, I work with clients and we talk about death. We talk about the burial. We talk about, you know, where's your money going to go? I had a discussion with someone today. They're like, oh, well, she wants to hold on to her money so she can leave it to us. I said, you already have a Jag. Why do you need more money? Really, you know, and the mother is not living her life because she wants to hold on to the money to give them. So there are things, you know, we try to say is, let's speak about it lightly. You know, I would bring that up to her, and she kind of got irritated, but then she kind of, like, laughed about it. So I think there's a lot more about being unsaid. So as you try to unleash your soul, you're really saying unsaid things. You're saying, I'm not going to worry about it. I'm going to say it in light. Okay, so, you know, you didn't sign that DNR, you know, so maybe we'll have a party with play hats, you know, in the ER and have them ready. And I've seen people do that, you know, and because once you go through the fear or the experience of saying it's not going to work, it's not going to this, that, or the other, then you could say, okay, now I can live. And I think that's where you're talking about radiant living. So let's talk a little bit more about your branches on your tree.
Sure. Yeah, for anybody who wants to check out the model, you can go to my website, which is drkatherinekelly.com. Or, to make it a little more simple, you can go to thesoulhealthmodel.com, and both of those will lead there. But the model itself is based on a tree. I'm kind of a tree lover. I've always adored different forms of trees. But as I was developing this model, I realized, you know, a lot of wellness models have 5 or 6 main components of health that they maybe talk about. But as a therapist, I spend an hour or more with clients every day digging into the depth of the human condition, and I realized that, to me, the other 4 branches that I added, to this basic, you know, 6, really, to me, had to be there because, you know, again, especially, I know you mentioned the financial crisis a bit ago, you know, nobody who deals with finances feels overall well-being. Nobody.
Right.
And so no other model that I know actually has a separate branch for financial wealth or health. So I'm going to run through these branches really quickly. But as I mentioned earlier, most people think of physical health, so that is a branch. Being a psychologist, of course, I have to have a psychological health branch on there. I have social health, interpersonal health, spiritual health, of course. Even though I think the model is inherently spiritual, I want to define, you know, within the model specifics about spirituality. We have financial health, recreational health, intellectual occupational health, environmental health, and sexual health. And most people, when I just list those off, they realize, oh, well, yeah, I hadn't thought about that branch, but that has to be there for me to feel, you know, overall well-being. And the point about this is that, you know, each and every one of those branches stands separate, but on the other hand, as a human, we really don't feel well unless we are balanced in all of those branches. And so in essence, if one or two of those branches, for lack of a clinical word, is out of whack, the rest of us is going to feel out of whack. But if we start to work on one or more of those branches, it's almost like this new balance and equilibrium happens within the tree. And so not only does it enhance those particular branches that you're working on, but it really enhances the rest of the tree itself. And to me, the soul is really housed in the core of that tree, which means the trunk. So the more you know your soul, the more solid your trunk, the more solid you are and grounded you are as a person, the more you can weather some of the storms of human life, which all of us have, or seasons of human life, which all of us have, depending on whether it's a life transition or some major change that's happened in general. And so the tree itself, again, has many different ways you can look at it, but it's very, the point is that there's a key interplay between each and every one of those branches that creates the whole, which is where that whole person health concept comes from.
And I think also, too, I can use as my own experience when we had Hurricane Katrina. Man, you'd be cut off to the bottom and there'd be no bark left on you. There's no such thing as branches because it hit every single one of those paradigms.
Right.
And if you have a chronic illness or terminal disease, it's going to hit, it may take out almost all of them. It may take out just a few, but it may take out all of them. Or if you have a sudden death of a life one, boom, there you go. Hey, my life is nothing like it was yesterday.
Right.
And it is hard to know, and I think with your book, so for people who are trying to rebuild after these, this is a good book also because you could say, well, maybe those are the pieces that should be there, and I'll work to put them together. So more like a puzzle pieces, but you're really carving out what that piece might be.
Right, right. And, yeah, absolutely. And a couple of things, you know, to go with that, you know, especially with the wonderful example of, you know, Katrina literally, you know, wiping out some of these forests and trees, is that whole idea that, you know, the more you know your soul, in other words, the more you know what you need and don't need out of life, the more grounded you are, the more balanced you are to begin with, the more you're able to weather those storms. And so the whole point is to continually get to know yourself and learn about yourself. And, you know, I talk a lot in the book about evolution. And really, to me, evolution is just about learning about yourself and how you can maneuver through some of those storms of life and how you can get through some of those things like Katrina and what it's going to do to enhance your relationships or, you know, help you work on, you know, being healthier in each one of those different categories. So I really look at this as an empowerment model. You know, something to it. I think a lot of people, if they look at it, you know, they can get overwhelmed by it, but really it's an empowerment model to help educate them about all the different branches of health, but then also help them see, oh, well, gosh, if I do work on this branch or that branch, then I'm going to sprout some new limbs. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to get some, mm-hmm. you know, really good balance over time. So it is sort
and
of
I,
that building block.
And I think it eases up also. Like I can remember using, again, the example of Katrina, you know, everybody started to put their pieces together. But now we're 10 years out from that, and a lot of their inner core and their soul has been so vacant and so lost that now a lot of people are having significant hits on chronic disease, whole lot of crazy illnesses, a whole lot of rapid death in the past, you know, year to 2 years, and it'll probably escalate going forward. Because really, when you even talk about a tree, you can cut it across and it should grow out. But if you really pour, you know, let's use arsenic as something, you pour that down the middle, it's just not going to be the same thing. It'll have this ulcering sore inside of it that it just can't rebuild. So when you say with people, you know, if you have a life hit, you can still have radiant health. You can. But your book showing all of these aspects is really important because some people say, I'll fix my house. I'll get a job. You know, I'll have a paycheck. And I'll go to church on Sunday, and that's it.
Right.
And they don't realize that all of those other things would have balanced them out better and maybe brought them a healthier, happier life. Because they really just don't even, when you get cut off at the knees, you're going to do what you have to do. Just like we said in the very beginning of this call, the difference between survival and flourishing, because a lot of people are surviving right now. And they're like, well, I really could care less about that stuff. I have no influence in that now. And I think what you and I would both say is do what you can to escalate some of these, and the others will start coming also.
Most definitely. Most definitely. And that's why, you know, I look at this as a blueprint. You know, it's not something that you check it off the list and you're done. It's a blueprint to keep enhancing and building and building and building so that, you know, like you said, you understand that when something major happens in life, that you have a better understanding of all the building blocks that you can either already have in place or basically the ones you can put in place that will help, you know, take you to that next level, whatever that is. But, you know, I think I'm one of those people who believes that there are lessons in everything, and so it's a matter of kind of, you know, learning and growing as we go, but figuring out, you know, how can we weather this and how can we really kind of make our lives even better than what they were before in some way. Yeah, it's an evolution model, and yet, you know, I think I really look at it as sort of that basic blueprint for folks for the most part.
And also in the book, for the listeners, there are a lot of questionnaires. So each branch, it has a questionnaire, and it'll say questionnaire for the interpersonal, let's say interpersonal branch of health. And there'll be a lot of questions and a little checklist there. So you can kind of gauge yourself. You may check it off today and go through the book and work on some other areas and set the book down for a year or so and come back and say, goodness gracious, look at how far I've come, or I'm really not getting too far, and maybe this is what I need to focus back on.
Right.
So can you tell us a little bit about how you chose these questions and these questionnaires? Because there are quite a few there.
Yeah, you know, I have done wellness work ever since I was 23 years old, I guess it was. So about 21 years, which is dating me. But so over the years, I've done lots and lots of presentations, and I've worked with lots and lots of clients about kind of what are all the aspects of interpersonal health, and what are all the aspects of sexual health, or, you know, so going down the branches. And what I realized was that, you know, again, just like asking someone to define health, most people look directly at physical health, but they don't expand it. And so what I wanted really to do with the questionnaires was to help expand people's ideas about what each one of those branches was, and kind of just get them thinking and expanding that to the point where, just like you said, they may pick one or two to work on, you know, for the year, but
right.
that they can pick this book up year after year after year to just kind of give a quick glance and do a little bit of an assessment to say, okay, well, I got these figured out, they're in place, what else do I want to add to it? And so it's building upon itself, and it's helping people jog their memory for, you know, what they set their minds on, you know, the year before or the previous years, and then just, again, kind of adding one or two as they go. But this is one of those things that, you know, I've got clients who use these year after year after year to just reassess and kind of reset themselves and set new intentions. I'm not a person who really believes, of course, in New Year's resolutions or certain kinds of goal setting, because I think goals have too much failure attached to them. But I tend to encourage people to set themes for themselves. So, for instance, if someone wants to work on their social health for the year, gosh, there's so many ways to work on just social health. If they want to work on their physical health, well, there's so many ways to work on their physical health. So, you know, a lot of the questionnaires are made, you know, have been created just to kind of help expand a person's understanding of each one of those branches.
Can you tell us a little bit about environmental health? I know a lot of people right now always talk about, well, I'm eating green, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, and, you know, they're always looking to put that little, what do you call it, those little pins or little badges of honor on their shirt, you know, and go walking around, and you go, but you took that shirt off and you're nothing like that.
Right, right. Well, and, you know, I actually, again, to expand the concept of environmental health, I expand it beyond the whole sustainability or, you know, the actual environmental awareness kind of thing. And the subtitle to that chapter is Inside Awareness of the Outside World. And again, it goes back to being aware of yourself from that inside point so that you can be in touch with or respect the outside world. So that can mean lots and lots of different things. So it can mean that whole idea of sustainability and your ecological impact that you have. But to me, you know, anything that is in our surroundings or an environment have an impact on who we are. So, for instance, you mentioned Katrina. Well, gosh, talk about your environmental impact. So people's environments were wiped out, and so that rebuilding process, you know, the discernment that came with probably certain people rebuilding their homes and, you know, how devastated people were when their physical environments were wiped out. But from an overall perspective, I add several different things in there. So not only, you know, what are the things around you, but also do you live in a clean and safe area? You know, do you live and do you have a good, safe shelter? Also, aesthetics for a lot of people. You know, to me, certain people don't really have a high priority for you know, they could live in a very small environment and be perfectly fine. But there are other people that need certain things around them. I'm for one, I need trees around me. You know, I grew up in Colorado and we had pine trees around. But when I moved here to North Carolina, it's been fascinating how much I need hardwoods around me. And so I live in a house that is completely surrounded by trees. And again, right. Hence my love for trees. But then also there's certain people who need what I call sacred surroundings. So they need something around them to remind them of their spirituality or their groundedness with either a religion or a certain kind of spirituality that they want to follow. So, you know, there's lots of things that go into the environmental branch of health. But the other thing as a psychologist that I really emphasize is the whole understanding of what the emotional environment is. And, you know, everybody can walk into a room and sense when there's tension or sense when something has happened that, you know, there's something in the air. And so there's an emotional kind of energy or environment that we have to be aware of as well, because it does impact who we are. And, you know, one of the things that I talk to clients a lot about right now is the corporate environment is in such a topsy-turvy place, for a nice way of putting it, because
right.
There's so much fear involved in people walking into their workplace and wondering if they're going to get a pink slip. And so the whole, mm-hmm. that fear works on, you know, really wears on them. And so there's so many different ways to really look at an environmental kind of health from that emotional, you know, perspective. And then also the whole idea of your cultural environment. You know, I grew up in Colorado, but I've lived in a few different parts of the country for school and work. And every time I move to a different state, there's a whole new culture to acclimate myself to. And, you know, I'm also, you know, having grown up by the mountains, you know, I feel pretty lucky because about 2 hours to the west, I can hit the mountains. About 3 hours to the east, I can hit the ocean. So, you know, it depends on what kind of a cultural environment you need in terms of, do you need a mountain community? Do you need an ocean community? Do you need a medical community to live in? Do you need some people really like living in, very diverse cultures. So you kind of have to look at all of those things in terms of environment in order to really enhance that branch of the soul health model.
And I know that's so true also with myself, because there's times when I don't mind, you know, wearing snow boots, you know, and big heavy coats. But of recent years, it's like, man, I really have to put a sweater on today. You know, I don't even own a coat. I haven't owned a coat probably for maybe over 25, 30 years now. I haven't owned a coat because I just had no need for it. And it's just what you are accustomed to and what you choose to be able to live by.
Right. Right.
But then, you know, I always think about, too, the areas you say you live in. And we really do need to believe also, when you talk about environmental health, is you really need to be able to take care of the area around you and not really put your bad stuff out there. I mean, I drive down the street these days and I still see people throwing garbage out the windows. To me, right. It's totally beyond me. I can't understand it. I don't know why it just happens. You know, and then I was driving down the street the other day and I saw a woman with a pillow and a blanket sleeping in the front grass on a huge mansion. And there was another person with us and I said, oh my goodness, you know, look at that woman. And the woman said, he probably just put her out. And I thought, wow, you know? And I thought, you know, how diverse people can actually think about what they see in the world. And that was just a perfect example of it, you know, where people are coming from and how, you know, if we just continue to keep doing for ourselves, but we have to believe that we're part of that bigger thing too, you know?
Absolutely.
And you
can't forget that you have an impact. Like you said, those people that throw the trash out the window somehow don't think that they have an impact, but they do.
Yeah.
And that's partially where stewardship comes in, is, you know, not only working to enhance your own overall health, but being very respectful of the health of others, whatever the health of others, you know, might mean for them. So, yeah, it's challenging.
it's challenging because you, and everybody says, well, you don't know what they are going through. And that is absolutely true. You don't know what everybody's going through, but it's not an excuse for their behavior neither.
Right. Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. And so that's where the consciousness has to come in.
Right. And then I think that's pretty much where we're at with this conversation is about consciousness and being aware. Once mm-hmm. you wake up to the idea, there has to be something more than this.
Right.
That's when we just came full circle of the conversation. There has
right.
to be something more than get up and do and get up and be and get it, you know, get the paycheck, go out on Friday and Saturday and spend it all, and on Monday you swear your bone broke again, you know. There's
right.
got to be more than that. So I think that's where we came in the beginning of the conversation about what does your soul really want.
Right. Well, and knowing, you know, frankly, you know, we're here to evolve. I mean, we're here to grow. We're here to, you know, evolve beyond our old ways and really grow into, again, I call it radiance, but a new mm-hmm. form of living that's even better than the last one. And
right.
and so, you know, we all want better. Well, not everybody, but I think
right.
everybody, you know, says that, you know, they want something better, and it's unfortunately the people that sort of complain and don't do anything about it that really are kind of stuck or mired in maybe a different level of consciousness of, well, you know, they might think, well, there's nothing I can do about it. But, you know, to me there's always something we can do about it.
But then that's also their choice or their comfort level, which that's very hard for many people. So
sure.
I think, you know, we flew through this hour. We have about 6 minutes left. Can you give us a little recap on what you think and how radiant living is really so important right now? Because as I've said in the beginning, you just feel like you're in an abyss and you don't really know. You know something's going on, but you don't know how to get there.
Right. You know, one of the things that I think is very timely right now is, you know, I wrote this book with the mindset that not only did I want to provide people with a blueprint to help them get to a more radiant level of living. But really, I think it's timely in terms of where our healthcare system is right now. Because where our typical healthcare system is, we have to become better advocates for ourselves. We have to. It's imperative. Because if we don't, you know, the way that the healthcare system is going right now, we don't have, you know, as much time with our healthcare staff. And so we have to know more clearly what we need and what we don't need to be more specific and concise. And I think this really, you know, part of my intention with writing this book was to help people become advocates for themselves. And so, you know, the take home, if people learn this model and they learn to use this model as their blueprint and they work through, you know, how to really kind of keep growing and moving in a radiant direction, then basically, you know, not only are they going to be able to utilize their health care more, you know, more specifically and probably really overall better, but they're going to be able to work better with themselves and with their health care providers, which I think that's another thing that I think is starting to happen more and more is that, you know, patients these days want to partner with their health care providers rather than just be kind of told what to do. And so it's that whole idea of working with them, because I think we forget that we hire our healthcare professionals. You know, we might go to a healthcare professional and then realize that, and when I say healthcare, I mean all aspects of health. But we forget that we have chosen to call them. We've hired them in a way. And so we can work to partner with them, too, and I think that's something that really, for us to reach a more radiant level of living, we have to learn to utilize them as partners in our health rather than sort of just the authorities. Because, you know, as I'm sure you working with your clients and me working with my clients, we might tell them what to do or how to do it, but they have to go do it. They have to do the work to get themselves wherever they need to go. And so it's really an empowerment model and a kind of an advocacy model that I think can be used really moment by moment, because once people get to know this model, you know, they can use it in any given moment. I have a client who put a copy of the model in her laundry room, mm-hmm. and she came back and told me, you know, I'll tell you, I put this copy of your model up in the laundry room because that's where I can go get away from the kids. That's where I can stand in there for 5 or 10 minutes folding clothes, looking at the model and just kind of gently assessing what I need to do for the week and to keep myself moving forward. And that's the beauty of this, is that it doesn't take more than a couple minutes just to kind of check in with yourself to say, hey, gosh, what do I need to work on this week? So it's a very simple model as well.
And that does help a lot to be able to have something in front of you, because you can say, you know, I'm really overwhelmed this week and I'm all on this one end. You know, and you can kind of tip yourself over and really feel like you just want to lay on the floor and just give up, you know. We've heard so many clients have said that, you know. I just laid on the floor and just sat there until it came to me, you know. Mm-hmm. I've even had some clients have said it's taken months, and that's okay.
Right.
When they finally figured it out, okay, fine. But some say they're still looking, and it may be years, and that's still okay too, because at least they're doing something. They know that the old way isn't working. They just don't know what that new footing is. And eventually it will show up. Maybe it's just the wrong time. So I think a lot of times you could be doing all of these steps and it might just not be the right time to fit in. And to have the intuition to know timing is also everything.
Absolutely. You know, and I think that's a good point. And I think the other thing is sometimes we overthink what we need instead of just getting that inner knowing for what we need. And so that's where that gut reaction comes from. A lot of times I'll ask people, you know, what does your gut tell you? And I can tell with how they're, where they're looking, that they're actually thinking through it. And I'll stop them. I'll say, no, you're thinking. You know, you're in your head. What is your gut telling you? And then they'll answer very quickly. And so, you know, a lot of times we have to get our heads out of our way in order to turn up that volume and hear that more quickly. But, you know, I always jokingly say that we may have the most developed brains, but sometimes they get in the way of our actual growth because we mire ourselves so much. But, you know, it's all about readiness, and it's all about, you know, getting the ducks in a row for what needs to align.
And also, too, you may be able to say, okay, I know that something needs a change. Okay, this is what I think I know needs a change. And you may have to step back and say, but I don't know how that's going to happen, and just let time or let the world just work. It's magic.
Right.
And, or, you know, or your belief in your higher power, whatever it is, because there are these times when you can't say, you know, hey, I'm just going to make the decision and tomorrow I'm going to wake up and it's all going to be hunky-dory. It may not be able to present itself yet. I mean, everybody would love a big house, a big car, and a big paycheck. But if it was that easy, we'd all have them. And apparently we don't, you know?
Well, and the other way that I would probably help someone look at that is that there are apparently things that need to be learned in the process. And so, you know, all of us, I think, have these themes of lessons we're supposed to learn in life, and they're not all the same because we're all different, you know, individuals and souls. But staying in the moment to really listen to ourselves at any given point is going to guide us to the next step, whatever that next step might be. And it might be doing nothing.
Doing nothing.
You know, Yeah. I always say, if you don't know what to do, don't do anything until you do. And like that, it will present itself when it's time.
Absolutely. Well, I'd like to thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Kelly. For the listeners, on today's show page description, there are several links there where you'll be able to go directly to Dr. Kelly's website for more information. And also, there is a link directly to purchase her book, which is called Soul Health, Aligning with Spirit for Radiant Living. So I'd like to thank you so much for being with us. I'm sure people will be mulling this over and saying, you know, I'm kind of getting it, maybe I'm not. But then there's going to be others who would be like, okay, so I need that checklist. Give it to me now, right?
Sure. Absolutely. And I'm so glad to be here with you. And great conversation. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for being with us. And you have happy holidays.
You too. Absolutely.
Thank you. So if anybody would like some more information, please do check Dr. Kelly's website. There is a lot of information there, and you can also, there's a contact us little box right there. You'll be able to contact her directly if you have further questions. And thank you so much for being with us today. I know sometimes the language of the conversation seems like, I'm not really sure what that means. Just take your time. Play a few minutes of the show. you know, grab Dr. Kelly's book and say, well, maybe that page makes sense. This book doesn't make sense, but this page does. Because then eventually you'll start to grow into it and you'll say, now I understand it, and you can't wait to go back to the beginning. Her book is fabulous. It has tons of tips, walkthrough explanations. It's not little itty-bitty print. It's great to read. It's very, very clear and concise, and it's not overly loaded with all these references, and you don't understand the words. You will understand everything. So please do pick up a copy of her book. And until tomorrow, this is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and have a wonderful day. I think I'm going to go turn the heat on. It feels like it might be in the 50s this evening. Isn't that crazy? So have a great day. Thank you.